This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly old permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Good, have a good day. We appreciate you being with us. We're happy to be here every single weekday morning, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific, on the ever-expanding CBS Sports Radio Network. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Coming up in 20 minutes, my friend J.J. Devaney is going to join us, soccer aficionado. He's the best. When he talks with his Irish accent, just sounds like soccer. And we got to get his thoughts on this Euro Super League type thing. This has rocked the sport to its core. What does it mean for Champions League? What does it mean for domestic leagues like the Premier League? What does it mean for the World Cup? But there is thoughts that if these teams, the 15 to 20 teams set to break away to make a Super League do it, that their players would be disallowed to compete in the World Cup. Could you imagine? And that the Premier League would tell Manchester United and Liverpool and other teams, screw you, you're not allowed to play in our league ever again. It's pretty insane. So we're going to talk to JJ about this coming up here on the show in 20 minutes from now. But first, I want to hear from David Sampson, longtime Marlins executive, longtime president of the Marlins. Now, after the new regime with Derek Jeter, et cetera, has become a media member and is a baseball analyst for CBSSports.com and the host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, a podcast. And so he was talking about the Yankees starting out of the gate going 5-10. That is the worst record in the American League, the second worst record overall in Major League Baseball, behind only the Colorado Rockies, who sold off their best player, Nolan Arenado, in the offseason. So let's start here with David Sampson, who believes that this team right now just is a poorly built roster that is banking on players to be what they were 3 or 4 years ago. Here's Sampson.
I'd take a call from the owner and I would say, break them up, trade them all, fire them all. See if it happens. Do you think Hal Steinbrenner knew when the pitching rotation was being put together with Gerrit Cole and the four people who had a potential to be good but had really had no chance to be good because they were hoping for a miracle? Bud Selig always used to tell us, if you sign a player thinking that 3 years ago his performance is going to inform what this year's performance is, and you're just going to dismiss it as having an off year or two, then you deserve every loss and you deserve every dollar you waste.
Whoa. Basically saying Hal Steinbrenner should have seen when Brian Cashman was spending money on guys that haven't been good in 3 years, banking on them getting back to being good. You deserve every loss. What Bud Selig used to say, don't overspend on guys that were good If you do, you deserve every loss. Do the Yankees deserve every loss? Sampson said if he was the president of this team, he'd go to the owner and say, fire them all. Get rid of these guys. More from David Sampson on what the optimism level is like amongst Yankee fans.
People are giving up on the Yankees. Remember our wait to see that Brian Cashman was not going to make it past 2021? Although I did pick the Yankees to go to the World Series. So can both of those be right?
People are giving up on the Yankees. People are, quote, giving up on the Yankees. It is April 20th. People are giving up on the Yankees.
People are giving up on the Yankees.
People are giving up. 5-10. Last place, American League. 15 games into the season. People are giving up. And Sampson admitted he picked them to go to the World Series. Sampson would go on to say that they're playing with no pride. They're playing like a bunch of nobodies. He said, I love you, Aaron Boone, but you have to get more out of this team with this payroll. Sampson says he would ask the team, I've got a question for you. He said he would assemble the team meeting, and say, do you care? Do you have any pride in your defense? Do you have any pride in coming to the park every day and putting on pinstripes? People are giving up on the Yankees. Is it too early to give up on the Yankees after just 15 games? After less than a tenth of the season has been played? Or is he right? Is this a fatally flawed team built on the hopes of a miracle that these guys turn back the clock 3 years ago and give you something that they really aren't anymore? Mraz, according to David Sampson, people are giving up on the Yankees. No, I right, can't. Okay, now I can hear Mraz.
This is as low as it gets, like compared to Dan Orlovsky telling people what it takes to be a great quarterback. Make up your mind, number one, Dave Sampson. Did they give bad contracts out, or should they be getting more out of these contracts? Because he went both ways there. Yeah, they shouldn't have signed Corey Kluber. I agree with that. Terrible. But you know what else is part of the Yankee problem right now, or why they had little flexibility to do other things with their roster if they really needed to tinker to be perfect? That they're paying Giancarlo Stanton all this money that hampered them over the luxury tax. Who gave Giancarlo Stanton that contract? David Sampson with the Marlins. He's part of the reason that the Yankees have bad contracts. It's because of the contracts he handed out. And now he's going to point a finger and say that the Yankees poorly constructed their roster? Hey, Bozo, part of the roster construction is because of you giving out that contract. Oh, what world are we living in? Wayne, take some accountability for yourself. You gave Giancarlo Stanton such a bad contract that the only team that could take it for nothing was the Yankees, who now can't afford to pay anybody else and is signing Corey Kluber. People have given up. They're 5 games under. They're 3.5 games back of a wild card. It's not even April 30th yet. It's April 20th. People have lost their mind. Have lost their mind. We're a month away from the NBA playoffs. We're burying the Yankees. They're 3.5 games out. David Sampson, you sucked as a GM. That's why you have this podcast. You tell me what it takes to be a construct a roster? I can't take it with all you Yankee haters anymore. It's ridiculous. Stop it! They're going to be fine! DJ LeMay is a hitting machine!
People are giving up on the Yankees.
Yeah, but it's not David Sampson's fault the Yankees took Giancarlo Stanton's awful contract.
Fault? No, because anybody could have taken it, but somebody had to take the contract that he handed out because it was so terrible. Then he can't 4 years later, talk about how the Yankees are counting on guys that were good 3 years ago and they shouldn't have these contracts on the books. He wrote the check to Giancarlo. That's a big part of the Yankee problems, is the man wrote the check and now is telling the Yankees they poorly constructed something that he, in essence, thought would be good, right? Like David Sampson, if he handed out that deal, thought Giancarlo would be great 4 years, right? Even if he was a Marlin still, like he thought he'd be good this year. So now you're blaming the Yankees, saying that their roster is counting on guys from 3 years ago. Outside of Corey Kluber, that who else is he talking about? It's an asinine statement. It is digging to try to have a little buzz and talk about good, juicy baseball in April by burying the Yankees now. Can we all just sniff the dandelions and understand that October is a long time from now, and we all know the Yankees are going to be there? I mean, you guys are the poking. It doesn't stop. Relax. They're about to play the Braves without Acuna for the next two games, and they're playing nobody for 12 days after that. The Yankees are going to be in first place by May 15th. I mean, relax.
We trade them all. Fire them all.
We can't smell the dandelions because you picked them all.
Oh, man. This is what happens when you take away Bogus at the Plate as a podcast. You give David Sampson one, and suddenly he's got a forum to tell you what it takes with good contracts and bad contracts, and the guy can't get out of his own way with the Marlins.
He didn't build the Yankees roster, okay? So you can't blame him for Giancarlo Stanton. The Yankees decided to accept the contract. It's an awful deal. It'll always be an awful deal. They could have said no to Giancarlo Stanton. They said yes to it.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. You just said it was an awful deal, right? Who gave Giancarlo Stanton that deal? Who gave him that deal? Sam. David Sampson gave him that deal. So is it not fair then to say David Sampson shouldn't be the one criticizing all the contracts on the Yankees' books and talking about how poorly constructed they are when he wrote the check for the biggest check on the team outside of Gerrit Cole? I mean, come on. Dan Orlovsky ran out of the back of the end zone. He's telling you what it takes to be a great franchise quarterback. This is the same thing. With all due respect, I know he's a CBS partner and everything like this. David Sampson, take a freaking hike. Take a hike. You're part of the reason we got to watch a guy strike out five times every night. Take a hike.
Well, what about how Sampson says, look, beyond Gerrit Cole, that rotation stinks. It's a miracle. It would take a miracle to assume that the four guys behind Gerrit Cole could do anything in that Yankees rotation.
Great point, David. But maybe if you took the time to understand what the Yankees have and how their roster is made up, instead of everybody throwing on those parachutes and coming into the Bronx and saying, look, the Yankees rotation stinks, you'd understand that the Yankees 1B ace is coming off Tommy John and will be back in July, and their other two best starters are currently at an alternate site because the Yankees are trying to limit their innings, and they'll be here for the stretch run of Davey Garcia and Domingo Herman. So, yeah, of course, yeah, I'm upset. The rotation stinks. They're running openers. I get all that. It's so stupid. They're trying to be the Rays. Totally, totally fair points. But don't talk about how the rotation is terrible and leave out the fact that basically their 2, 3, and 4 starters aren't here right now and will be here. It's dopish. It's not paying attention to what's going on.
But can the Yankees stay in a race until those guys come back? I mean, if they're 5-10 already, if they end up being 10-20, if this pace continues, I mean, they've lost to everybody in the division and they haven't even played the Red Sox yet.
By the way, I wish they did play the Red Sox because the Red Sox are fake fraud paper champs too, and that would be probably help the Yankees get wins and the Red Sox would have losses. Yankees got to figure out a way to beat the Rays. They do. But stay at this pace, sure. Yeah, if the Yankees stay at this pace and finish 60-100 this year, yeah, they're not going to make the playoffs. That's the point. They're not going to stay at this pace. You know they're not going to stay at this pace. We all know they're not going to stay at this pace. It's fun now to kick them while they're down because this is the time to kick them while they're down. They're not going to stay at this pace. I just told you, May 15th, this team is going to be at or around first place in the AL, at least maybe the best record in the American League, because now they're going to start to beefcake up on some really bad opponents. And get some confidence back. I mean, it's ridiculous. It is just these guys fishing for something right now that's not there with the Yankees. All right, have some fun. They're playing bad baseball in April. Ooh, we'll see you in October.
People are giving up on the Yankees.
Who's giving up on them? Who's DA? Bogus? Is that who's Sampson talking about?
Who
gave up on him?
Pilati says he's giving up on him.
Oh, stop, Pete. Go mow the lawn.
Well, okay, so Pete's giving up on him. What's wrong with that?
Because he's a Met fan, of course. This is what people hate the Yankees. I get it, right? Like, I hate the Cowboys. People hate the Yankees. People hate Notre Dame. So when those teams struggle, it is fun to laugh at them and have a good old time, right? You hate the Lakers. They stink. We hate on the Celtics. We hate on the Patriots. When they stink, it's all fun. I get that that's part of the deal. Pete hates the Yankees because he grew up a Met fan, and Yankee fans made fun of him his whole life. You want to, at 5-10, you want to throw a parade that they stink? Fine, have fun. You gave up on them? You know damn well, come Labor Day, we're going to be sitting there going, man, September's not even fun. The Yankees have already locked up a playoff spot. And that's the joke of it. All of you guys burying them now, David Sampson himself, better be there at the beginning of September going, man, we really shouldn't have crushed the Yankees in April. But of course, you'll fade and talk about something else, and we won't pay attention to that. Everybody was wrong about the Yankees in April. And that's what bothers me more than anything. If you're going to be here now for the burial, you better be here for the revival.
Okay.
Trade them all. Fire them all.
I want
trade
this.
Trade them all.
I want this on record.
Sounds like a guy who ran the Marlins.
I want this on record. April 20th at 7:10 a.m. Eastern Time, Mraz said by May 15th, they'll have maybe the best record in baseball. That's what you just said. That they would be in first place and maybe the best record in baseball in less than a month from now. Are you ready to put your name on that?
I am ready to put my name on it. You know why? Because unlike David Sampson, I do my research and I look ahead at the Yankee schedule, and the Yankees are going to have big problems if they're playing like this up against their schedule over the next 3 weeks. Yankees are about to go on a tear. And their best opponent just lost their best player for the next two nights. Yes, I pay attention. I see what's coming. I see the schedule ahead of them. I see the team they have. Yes, I'm ready to put my name to it because I don't just say wild things like David Sampson without paying attention to what's going on.
This sounds very piggy doodle dandy of you.
I'm here snorting around. I'll snort it all day long. May 15th. Piggy doodle dandy. I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay. On May the 15th, the Yankees need to have one of the best records in baseball.
Good. Here I am. Give me the trough.
They're 5-10. 5-10, you've got no evidence that this team is going to be one of the best in baseball.
Yes, they do. The roster, the fact that they've been there the last couple of years, the fact that they're about to play some terrible teams.
Sampson says it's a broken roster, that the roster stinks.
Yeah, great, great. The roster stinks, yeah. That's why everybody was saying the Yankees had to sign DJ LeMahieu last year. That's why Gary Sanchez is saying, what's so bad about the roster? Yeah, they have some players that frustrate me. Aaron Hicks, Corey Kluber, I get it. The roster stinks? Oh, stop it. Stop it. If you knew anything about rosters being good, David Sampson, you wouldn't be doing a podcast right now. Get lost. And this is coming from somebody who does podcasts, all right? I understand what life comes to when you're doing podcasts.
Okay. It's on record. May the 15th, the Yankees will have one of the top three records in baseball. I think that would be a fair paraphrasing of what you said.
And if they do, I want everybody to do pig snorts on the air with me. One by one, everybody's going to do their big pig snort. Everybody joins in a big pig snorting circus. A honk here and a honk there.
But if the Yankees don't have a top three record in baseball on May the 15th, you have to wear a piggy tail, okay? A little squirrely piggy tail. And Danielle and Taylor have to pull your piggy tail on the show on video.
This has taken a turn, but okay, sure.
How about the full costume?
You've got to wear a pig nose and a piggy tail, and when Taylor and Danielle pull your piggy tail, you've got to oink on May the 15th if the Yankees don't have a top three record in baseball.
All right. Seems like a weird fetish to want to watch, but okay.
I just want Piggy Doodle Dandy to be put in his place, making these bold proclamations for a 5-10 team, that a team that's 5 games under 500, worst record in the American League, less than a month from now will have one of the top three records in baseball. I want the pig to be walked to not a slaughterhouse, that's a little too
It's graphic,
visceral and violent, but I want that pig to be taunted by having his tail pulled by Taylor and Danielle as he wins.
I don't know how we got here, but okay, sure, I'm in. This seems like a very on-the-fly payoff, but I'm in.
People are giving up on the Yankees.
They're giving up, Mraz! Time to give up the ship on the Yankees.
What a nerd. Loser. David Sampson, loser.
Okay, now we have something to look forward to, May the 15th. When we come back here on the show, J.J. Devaney on these crazy Super League reports from soccer across seas. D.A., CBS Sports Radio.
Mornings are hard. Your sports radio show doesn't have to be.
D.A., Mraz, Andrew Bogus, Pete the Body Bilotti, you guys are like my celebrities. I don't like Hollywood. I don't like movie stars, musicians, none of that. You guys are like my celebrities, and I really appreciate you guys every time I get a chance to listen.
It's D.A. on CBS Sports Radio.
If you miss anything or want to hear it again, listen to the D.A. show in podcast form. You can listen to the entire show or the best of the show every single morning by going to your favorite podcast platform and searching The DA Show or searching Permission Granted Podcast. Speaking of elite podcasts, Caught Offside is an excellent soccer podcast. They cover all ground, everything soccer. They do a wonderful job and have great chemistry as well. And one of the co-hosts of the podcast joins us regularly for his soccer insight. And this week, the sport has been rocked by the announcement over the weekend that there is going to be a breakaway Super League by a number of the largest, richest, wealthiest, most powerful clubs in the world. And this is met with crazy resistance from everybody, media, fans, leagues, organizing bodies. Everybody is saying, don't do this, don't do this, and threatening some real boycotts and lockouts and punishments and penalties. Will it happen? Joining us this morning on the show from the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast is our friend J.J. Devaney. J.J., good morning, my friend.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. You can watch J.J. on our simulcast at watchda.com and on the Twitch simulcast channel as well. Okay, so first off, what was your reaction when you heard the news and read the report over the weekend?
I was at a soccer match in Brooklyn, DA, real soccer. A Brooklyn soccer club, if I may name them, from Yoa, who have existed from 1912, founded by Norwegian immigrants. So I'm watching the real thing there, and Andrew texts me with Tariq Panja's article from the New York Times. And I just thought, honestly, this is another, I guess, rumor, another little push towards the Super League, because this has been muted and rumored for as long as I've been watching football, actually, since the Champions League group stage format in 1992, when I was just but a boy of 10 years old. So I didn't pay any attention to it. Then my phone started blowing up. We heard there was going to be announcements. There was a statement. There was a website created, because, you know, the minute you got a website, something's happening. And we had statements from Florentino Perez, who is the president of Real Madrid and the president of this new Super League breakaway. By the way, they've had so many years to sort this out, and they've just called themselves the Super League. You know, I mean, this is Marvel level of lack of care. Anyway, we have statements. There will be lawyers, no doubt. There have been threats from UEFA saying that the want away players, the players don't want away, but the want away clubs, their players will be prohibited from playing in international soccer competitions like the World Cup, the European Championships. There's been fan protests. Leeds United played Liverpool. Liverpool, one of the clubs who want to break away. I say clubs that want to break away. I should be clearer. Liverpool's owners, Fenway Sports Group, they want to join this European Super League. They, of course, own the Boston Red Sox. And Leeds United wore T-shirts last night saying, earn it, with the Champions League crest on it. And that's the key to this. Earning it, qualifying, meritocracy. All that would be gone with this plan from the 12 rebel clubs, the Dirty Dozen, as some people are calling them. They don't want that. They want to ring fence the huge monies in European soccer, and they don't want to share, basically.
So the situation is, soccer has always been defined by meritocracy, that if you win, you move up in your leagues, you move up in your divisions, promotion, relegation, etc. You have to earn your spots in those Champions League spots in that, and this is just the way that soccer is. And these 12, which would be 15 to 20, specifically 15 clubs, would just have a set league, and they would always qualify And so they would always get a piece of the pie, more money, television rights, et cetera, more control. So this is what they are fighting. Do you believe if we saw a Super League that these other domestic leagues, like the Premier League, would ban these clubs? Like there would be no more Liverpool or Man United or Man City ever to play in the Premier League ever again? Because that is a crazy concept.
It is, in particular for, and I don't mean to take shots at Manchester City, but Manchester City are new money. They've been winning Premier Leagues for all of a decade. 20 years ago, they were in the third tier of English football. So it would be stranger not to have Manchester United or Liverpool involved in English Premier League football. But DA, the plan that they want, the bullet point plan that was laid out by the Dirty Dozen, by the Super League Breakaway 12, was that, hey, we're going to play in this league, but we're also going to come back and play in our domestic leagues on the weekend. We're not going to change the fact. Like, how would that work? You're going to go and cream billions from this league, this closed European league, then come back to your own league and just dominate it because of your financial might that you'd have. It's already imbalanced. European soccer is already at crisis point. Look at Juventus, a decade of dominance in Liga Serie A. Look at the Bundesliga. It's Bayern Munich every year. We have this little dance around springtime where we think Borussia Dortmund are going to win. Not really. It ends up being Bayern Munich. And Manchester City have dominated English football, albeit with interruptions from Liverpool in the past three. You know, Liverpool have at least challenged them in the past 3-4 years. So it's already broken. This doesn't solve anything. And what Florentino Perez was wheeled out in front of the media today to talk and to defend this Super League idea. And he says it's there to save football. It's not. He says it's there because of lost revenues and COVID. No, it's because Stan Kroenke, John Henry, you know, American venture capitalists, they don't want to be involved in a league where there isn't certainty. Like, look at it right now, DA. Tottenham, Liverpool, Arsenal, super clubs, but yet looking likely that none of them will qualify through the normal route, the meritocracy route, by finishing in the top four or winning the league and going to the Champions League. So what is this about? They're basically, take for example, Tottenham. They've built a $1 billion stadium. What do they want? They want all that money coming in. They don't want the uncertainty year to year of actually having to be a good side. Who wants that? And that just flies in the face of how European football and the European football pyramid is supposed to be. Granted, with all the caveats I've just said about financial inequality that exists anyway.
JJ Devaney joins us this morning here on the show, co-host of the Caught Offside Soccer podcast. As this news has rocked the soccer world and globally, it's the biggest sports story anywhere on earth right now. So let me ask you, I can't find anybody that defends this. I can't find a media member. I can't find a fan base. I can't find anybody that says, yeah, you know what? This is a good idea. Have you been able to find anything? And if so, what's the argument for this?
No, because it's so obvious what's happening here. It's a power grab. It wants to change the face of European soccer, like I said, to ring fence the revenues, the TV deals. There have been bots on Twitter, DA. There's been bots that have said
bought
Super
by
League.
The Fenway Group.
I would never make that accusation. In fact, it's funny, the Fenway Group, there's been a little bit of a reaction to them, which has been, oh, not the Fenway Group. You know, because if you were to ask a Manchester United fan what their view of the Glazers and Joel Glazer, it would not be kind. There's not a good, let's say the PR on the Glazers has been terrible. They've saddled the club with debt. They've taken money out of the club. Like last year, they talk about COVID. Joel Glazer and his brothers each took 20 million out of Manchester United. You know,
and the Glazers own the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as well.
They do. So, but go back to FSG, there was a sense that these were good venture capitalists. But really, look at Project Big Picture that was launched. I mean, we've forgotten about that. What, 6 months ago, there was an attempt, I don't want to say a coup, that's too loaded, but Liverpool and Manchester United, the Glazers and John Henry, looked to reshape English soccer, where the top six, the big six, would take control of English soccer. And that was rejected. So, you know, there's no one here to be lauded amongst these people. They're not trying to save soccer. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to create as much possible streams of revenue. They don't want the uncertainty of soccer. And honestly, DA, I haven't heard a good argument for it because there isn't one.
UEFA's pushing back on it. FIFA's pushing back on it. All of the domestic leagues are pushing back on it. The media's pushing back on it. Some of the players are pushing back on it. Many of the managers are pushing back on it. Almost all of the fans are pushing back on it. So it kind of feels like, how could this ever happen? Do you believe that we are headed for a world where if this happens, the best players in the world wouldn't be allowed to play in the World Cup because FIFA would ban them?
I mean, I hope not. We're about to podcast in a couple hours with Tariq Panja from the New York Times, who I said broke the story. And hopefully he'll have more insight as to what he feels the next steps are. But right now, I mean, I would believe UEFA. I mean, if there's a breakaway league next year, you know, why would they protect these clubs and these players? Why would they, you know, the people who are coming to rob your house, why would you open the door for them? I see serious sanctions coming down from UEFA and FIFA. Now, there is a feeling on Twitter this morning that I woke up to from some journalists that, in fact, the backlash has been so unanimous and there's been such a groundswell of defiance, really, against this, even from the Prime Minister and the UK government, that, you know, some of the clubs involved, Manchester City in particular, are wavering on this idea now and that it may collapse. But I honestly don't know. And as I sit here right now, I'm kind of upset and pretty scared for what's to come next.
I'm trying to figure out if there is an American parallel to this. And maybe the only way you could think of it is, let's say in college basketball, because football doesn't really work because you only play once a week and you only have about 12 games a year. If in college basketball, you took Duke and North Carolina and Gonzaga and UCLA and Kansas and Kentucky, and they said, we're playing in a Super League, okay? Right. And we're going to have our own television network, and we're going to play against the EuroLeague champions or the best teams internationally. But we also want to play in the SEC. We also want to play in the ACC. But that because of that new Super League that they would play in, they would be able to recruit all of the best players. And it would never make any sense for them to go back and then play in the ACC or the Big 12 because no one would ever be able to beat them. And then the NCAA said, well, okay, if you do that, you can't play in March Madness. You can't play in the NCAA tournament. And none of your players can go to the NBA or something like that. I mean, that's kind of the best comp I can find to American sports. Is there a better one you can think of?
Well, what's the biggest college basketball moment of the year? It's all building towards that month in March. So imagine if Michigan and some of the other power school, big schools. Now, I'm not talking that they're the most successful schools, but the big schools said, well, you know what? Like, if we go on a run, the interest, we're going to fill. Imagine it's not COVID times. We're going to fill arenas. We're going to, you know, attract most people on TV. Say Notre Dame basketball became amazing or something like that. I don't know. You know, look at the interest they have. Notre Dame will say, well, look, we have supporters everywhere. Our football team has a specific deal with a major network. And they said, we're breaking away from March Madness. We're having our own tournament and you can't join. And we may invite some schools in just to, you know, beat up on them or whatever, but that's it. And they'd break away from the NCAA. That's the only thing I can really compare it to. But don't forget that, you know, American leagues, professional sports leagues are closed leagues. That, you know, and that fact, you know, Stan Kroenke, you know, he's an owner. He's not an owner because he's successful, because his team has been promoted through the ranks. You know, the Rams haven't just come up. It's because of money. And there's a fundamental disconnect there, I feel, for American owners that about European soccer. They want certainty, DA.
Yep, and that's a very important piece of this, and this is why much of the world is blaming American sports, is because we have billionaire owners that have been able to accumulate enough wealth to where now they're buying into international soccer.
Right.
And they're going, well, we don't want to have to be competitive every single year with the threat that we will drop down to the second division where the television money and the revenue is just not nearly what it is. We like closed leagues where we know every single year as the Dallas Cowboys, whether we go 4-12 or 12-4, we make this much money. And so Correct. You have the Kroenkes of the world and the Fenway groups of the world and the Glazers of the world and all these guys that have been involved in American sports. And I'm sure international owners that look at American sports and go, wow, Jerry Jones could be terrible on draft day every single year, and it doesn't matter. He still makes $1 billion. We want that, and that is what is informing this decision. I don't know. There's a part of me that feels like this is one big chess move by these big teams that just want more power and more money. Do you think that this is just a power play, but they don't really have the stomach to go through with it?
Well, whether they have the stomach or not, this is the most, I mean, it's the most they've done, DA. They've floated these things before. We know the conversations have been going on behind the scenes, but they're making statements now. Like I said, they have a website. You might be right, though. This may be just a move to further, like, the Champions League, UEFA, have been making compromises for the big clubs, you know, piecemeal compromises over the last 20 years. You know, so maybe this is just a Super League by attrition. Maybe this is a big stink. It's a power play. And then eventually, you know, they get a little bit more of what they want and a little bit more. And we just get there by degrees. You could be right about that. Honestly, DA, I don't know. But I'm scared because there's something great about the Champions League, about the structures of European football. There is something truly great. And for all the inequalities, for all the inequities, for all the unfairness that does exist, and it is real. Even in the, you know, this UEFA aren't the good guys here. FIFA aren't the good guys here. There are real systemic problems with the accumulation of wealth at the top of European soccer. And maybe you could say that the Premier League's TV deals have really driven this and supercharged this move for a Super League. But it's a beautiful, beautiful thing when it works right. Look at Atalanta PSG. Atalanta were minutes away from knocking PSG out of the Champions League last season. They were there on merit. They were there based on their league decision. And that is what we want to see. We want to see the game remain as it is, a meritocracy. And I'm scared that it's we're slowly but surely losing that. And maybe we have been for years.
Always an excellent conversation with J.J. Devaney, co-host of the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast, alongside Andrew Gundling. They do a phenomenal job. They got great chemistry. They got great soccer brains. They got great soccer conversation. Check it out. They're going to tape a new conversation today, a new podcast today, Caught Offside Soccer Podcast. Caught Offside. They do a phenomenal job. Check it out. And also follow them on Twitter at CO Soccer Pod. JJ, always good, my man, to talk. Hopefully when we talk next, we'll have better news to report.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And hopefully the Yankees start hitting. You know, they got to start playing small ball. It can't all be home runs. When the home runs dry up, DA, this is what you get. You get upset Yankee fans. And, you know, hopefully you'll have me on to talk about the New York Giants with Mraz, you know, because these are the things really that I want to talk about. I don't care about soccer. I'm just on here to hopefully finagle my way into some kind of baseball reporter job.
Okay, excellent. We'll hold you to that. Thanks, buddy.
Take care, man.
J.J. Devaney joining us this morning here on the show. Standing by with our headline this morning is his doppelganger, Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
Good morning, everyone, including my twin. If anyone has ever needed to be a Laker to be a part of Showtime in Hollywood, it's Joe Ingles.
Ingles in transition for three. Pow! And Joe holds the pose, saying, don't you know I'm 50% from three? I'm the greatest shooter in the world, sans Steph Curry, and I can bury anything.
David Locke on Jazz Radio. Ingles, 21 points, 5 threes, as the Jazz got a split of a two-game series at Staples, 111-97 over the Lakers. The Nuggets outlasted the Grizzlies, 139-137 in double OT. Just one overtime in Milwaukee. The Suns topped the Bucks, 128-127, and Steph Curry with 49 more points in the Warriors' 107-96 win in Philly. Baseball last night, the Dodgers took a 4-3 loss in Seattle. The Rays got their fourth straight win, 4-1 in KC, and the Cardinals roughed up the Nats 12-5. Paul DeJong hit two of St. Louis's five homers. Rusty Harden filed a legal response to the 22 lawsuits against Deshaun Watson yesterday. They say they have evidence that numerous allegations are, quote, simply not true or accurate. Harden wrote that eight accusers bragged about working with Watson after he apparently acted inappropriately. And from the NHL, Patrick Marleau broke his tie with Gordie Howe for the most games played ever last night, now 1,768. His Sharks losing, though, 3-2 in a shootout in Vegas. DA, back to you.
That's a significant record. Restate that. What was the record specifically?
He has now played the most games in NHL history. It's 1,768. Gordie Howe had the record for almost 60 years.
Wow.
And Patrick Marleau broke it last night.
But Gordie Howe has the WHA games also, right? When he was playing for like at 50 years old for the Hartford Whalers or something.
Well, so at 50, he played a game. The thing was, because he played so early in his career, he got the record at 1,000. The first guy that retired was 999. Gordie Howe, when he played his 1,000th game, was the first player to play that many and then set the record then played 767 more games. And then Patrick Marleau finally caught him because they play longer seasons, but he's also played 20, and he's very rarely heard. So it's full of 82-game wow. campaigns, so he's able to catch him.
That's an amazing record. Wow. Good for him. When we come back here on the DA Show, are the Rams too much about image? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Mornings on CBS Sports Radio.
What a nice story. That mother, imagine a pain in her heart. And to find your daughter after that, oh, that's incredible. I'm like fluttered.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Thanks so much for being with us on a fine Tuesday. Remember, you can have us on around the house by telling your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio. Remind it, it's CBS Sports Radio presented by Odyssey. That's our new company name, rebranded after Entercom and Radio.com. Check it out, CBS Sports Radio on your smart speaker. By the way, a little distinction on that Patrick Marleau record, which is just amazing. He's played 899 straight games. Talk about an Iron Man. But he just broke the record of most NHL games played. Gordie Howe is another 400 in the WHA because Gordie Howe played until he was 51. So the Los Angeles Rams have rented a Malibu beach house and converted it into their draft war room. And we'll be operating out of this during the draft coming up next week. And there's pictures online of an infinity pool overlooking the ocean. There's cush, lavish couches and camera setups and desks and big boards and draft boards and video boards and Rams helmets and Rams throw pillows and Rams decor all over the place. I will say that it appears this is some type of financial agreement or endorsement opportunity with Rocket Mortgage, because I see a Rocket Mortgage pillow prominently displayed. But I gotta say, if this is a chance to one-up Cliff Kingsbury, who last year did his draft from his living room with the mountains of Phoenix in the backdrop and his huge $5,000 couch and his huge flat screen. If this is because Sean McVay and Cliff Kingsbury are noted friends, remember that's how Cliff Kingsbury got the job on his resume, friends with Sean McVay. If this is to one-up Cliff Kingsbury, it's pathetic. Can you just give me a grimy old NFL war room in some old offices for the 1970s with a couple of rotary phones and black and white projectors? I mean, do we need the Malibu Beach House? I'm sorry. I guarantee you the Rams have a worse draft than if they were locked in some type of storage closet. I mean, think about it. You know, you got to get work done at the house nowadays because of COVID and because your office is shut down. If you lived in Malibu with an infinity pool overlooking the ocean, do you think you'd be more or less productive than if you lived in a double wide and staring out the back of your trailer, you were looking at artificial turf and a couple of lawn gnomes and empty Bush beer cans thrown by your neighbor? You tell me who's going to be more productive. You tell me. Oh, man. Oof. Boy, I just got done with that Zoom meeting. Why don't I go out to the infinity pool? Oh, man, it's a beautiful day again. Why did I do that? oh man, just looking out that window. You know, when were you more focused in school? Were you more focused in December and January when you looked out the window and it was cold and gray and dark and you had no choice but to stare at the teacher drone on and on? Or when it's May and you're looking out the window, you're like, oh man, it's beautiful and sunny and it's bright and I just want to be out of here right now. Of course. I don't like this. The Rams, too, all about the LA image. Changing the logo and now have those ridiculous jerseys and now they're going to do the draft out of a Malibu beach house. No. I want rotary phones, dim fluorescent lighting, and everybody looking like the only thing we have to do this whole weekend is to stare at draft boards. That's what I want.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.